Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it.
Black, white, right, left.
Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Welcome back to Whiskey Congress. We have a lot going on in the news, but before we do that, we got to get to the most important part of the show, reviewing whiskeys.
Whiskey!
So, Steve, take it away.
Okay. So, wait. Hold on, Jim. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. Good. You know, big transition. You know, we talked about this earlier, but I have resigned from my job or put in my 2 weeks' notice and, you know, moving on to another venture, a little bit bigger. You know, different.
I'm excited for you. I know you're going through the emotional swing of,
it's hard because I loved what I love what I do. I'm good at it. But this, you get presented with opportunities and you take them, and you being, an independent contractor, you deal with this, that's your day to day. Is, kind of looking for opportunities and making the most sense out of them. And, so me being a little bit different in terms of the way, our work set up, this took a lot of thought and reflection and everything else. But it's an exciting change. So, anyway, that out of the way.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers. New beginnings. Cash money. Bitches. And that being said, that leads us to the cheers takes us to our whiskey of the day. Which is Rabbit Hole. It's a Kentucky bourbon. I will tell you, my thoughts on the taste are going to be that it's not overly complex.
I agree.
It doesn't, you're not in there. It doesn't twist your tongue up and you're like, ooh, what is this? What is that?
Right.
There's a subtle sweetness to it. I would say a little honey, a little vanilla. There's some spice that kind of sits there at the end. It's got a high ABV, the high alcohol volume. I mean, it's coming in at 95 proof. So
that's a big one.
It's strong. So this bottle hopefully doesn't get too low. Otherwise, the show right. might go fucking haywire. But it's a solid bourbon. I like it. I would say, if this makes sense, it tastes young. Like it's. I don't know if it's been.
You think I think it's probably just a side effect of the high alcohol content, because I wouldn't say young. I know what you're saying.
I don't know if
it does have some bite to it.
I don't know if this is set in a barrel beyond 3 years.
I don't either.
And you don't necessarily need a bourbon to, as you would with a scotch. But sometimes, bourbons they smooth out a little bit over a longer period of time in the barrel. In that
sure.
oak barrel. And I don't think that we got that because it is, I mean, the alcohol is strong in this one. Is that a Star Wars reference?
It I don't know. Maybe. Could that be a tease to something
Maybe.
Later?
But I like it. So what's your score? You got it written there.
I hate to do it. 2 weeks and two bourbons in a row. I got it an 89.
Okay. So mine written here is 88.
88. Okay.
It's good. It's solid. I could drink it.
I would put it right on par with Eagle Rare. Very different. I think Eagle Rare is bigger.
Well, Eagle Rare is bigger, and I think Eagle Rare complex. Is distinctly more complex and like drier.
Yeah, I agree.
It's different. So, back to back bourbons. This one gets an 88 for me. You give it an 89.
So
it's still
ballpark,
good.
Yeah.
Go buy it. What cost wise? What was it? $40?
50.
Okay. For $50, I don't know.
Okay.
That seems a little high, I guess. I mean, just based off of, if you're, what I would argue is if you have to pick between Eagle Rare and Rabbit Hole, go with the Eagle Rare because you're going to save yourself $20 and get, in my mind, a slightly better bourbon.
And in my mind, an equivalent bourbon. I would say right, I like or, Eagle or, Rare.
Okay.
Eagle, yeah, 88,
so
89,
we'll
right,
say,
right.
We'll say an equivalent bourbon for
almost
save
half
yourself
the price,
$20.
Yeah. Yep. All right. So... good bourbon.
All right. And then we got the founders backing us up here, which someone brought this up to me.
Look out.
Oh, shit. Someone brought it up to me that, they're like, so you guys drink whiskey And then you have a beard to back it up. And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, right. And I'm like, yeah. And they said, yeah, but that isn't that a lot? And I'm like, no. Right? No, it's not a lot. But then it, you know, the more you talk to, you know, sane non-alcoholic people, I guess you realize maybe it is a lot. But I think we do a good we've done a good job of controlling it and not letting it become a problem. But I guess for some people, the idea of a couple of whiskeys and a couple of beers over the course of an hour or so is a lot. And to
that's adorable.
You guys suck. try it sometimes.
Yeah, so I'm drinking the
loosen up your asshole a little bit.
I'm drinking the Founder's Dirty Bastard.
I got the Mosaic Promise from Founders, and I love it. You know, like Founders is actually they've done a pretty good job of, you know, like. You know, my issue with beer is that if it's too heavy, I can only drink one, and there's nothing wrong with that. But you got one, and it just sits there in your stomach, and you feel like you're burdened by it for a while. So that's why I typically tend to stay away from some of the heavier beers. But I have been flirting with some of the different offerings from Founders, and this Mosaic is really good.
And the Dirty Bastard is really good, too. It's kind of like a maltier IPA.
What was that one I had last week that was real bad?
The bad one?
Yeah.
Backwoods Bastard.
Yes, that should stay in the backwoods. That was... you're not going to win them all. But for the most part...
people out there who will love it.
Exactly. I mean, somebody out there likes it.
There's another beer from Founders called Rubaeus. It's like a raspberry beer, and it's really sweet. And people just fucking love it. It's just not my thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'll have one every now and then, like, okay, I can do this and I'm done. But, I mean, again, based on taste, people love it. And, go. Do you. All right, man. So, it's good that we're getting the show in and that we have some whiskey because the world as we know it has come to a crashing end. Net neutrality is gone. Everything is awful. The world is going to, I don't know. People are going so crazy about this. And I got to admit, there's a lot of things on the surface level that sound really bad to me, like companies could abuse this power, but don't worry, they've assured us they won't. That's always comforting. And I don't like the way it was handled by the FCC subcommittee. So it was just a 5-person, 3 Republican, 2 Democrat vote that went down on party lines as net neutrality is gone. Now, how much that's going to affect you and me in our daily lives, I'm guessing it'll take some time for this to actually become law and be implemented. And I'm guessing we will have no idea when that happens.
I don't know. So the reality is that net neutrality is actually new, right? I mean, really came into play. They made the Obama administration, they put some rules and laws in place back in 2015. And telecom companies have been pretty much bitching about them since the day they went in. And so along the line of what Trump has been doing from the beginning, which is, trying to erase Obama's presidency, this falls right in line there. Now, I agree with you. I think that it probably won't be a big, huge immediate change where we go into this internet dystopia where there, you know, is no information anywhere, but there are some legitimate dangers and risks and concerns. And a lot of it we didn't notice, but these telecom companies were taking advantage of the fact that they didn't have checks and balances. There were things that they were doing that AT&T and Verizon and Sprint, trying to limit access to certain things and certain features because, you know, people, it allowed people to kind of work their way around, you know, paying extra fees, using FaceTime, and there were certain apps that you could download to tether, and AT&T would like block those apps because it's just like, well, we charge a certain fee for tethering, and then this app prevents us from charging that fee. We don't know, so we want to block this app. Some of the other things like, charging more money for using things like FaceTime and all the different ways that people communicate. Like those are things that happened. These are things that were fought in court prior to 2015. So, these telecom companies, they know exactly what is, you know, they're well aware of what's going on, and it's not all about them just saying, all right, we want a little bit more freedom to work within, you know, the communication framework. No, they're definitely probably going to limit certain things and charge us for certain things. It's not going to go instantly black, and you're not going to immediately pay $15 for Twitter and $10 right. for Facebook, things like that. Now, could those things happen? Could you start to see a service fee for, you know, access to some things? You may. I don't know how soon, but it's definitely a reality. I think that there's got to be a balance. Is this the end of the world? No. Does it suck? Yes. How bad does it suck? Scale of 1 to 10, it's probably about a 6 now.
Right.
Could it get worse? Yeah. And we just have to, it's like anything else, we have to monitor it.
Right. I think part of, if I understand correctly, the argument by the service providers is basically everyone drives on the same highway, but we built and paid for the highway, so why shouldn't we have control over how it's used? And I can see that argument, but it also does raise a lot of scary flags. Like if you start controlling information and controlling...
Right, I mean, because it's going to come down to money, right? And it's going to come down to them saying, all right, if you are a big law firm, a big global law firm, and you want access to information, if you pay more, you get more information, you get it faster. And the way we can allow you to get it faster is if we throttle, you know, Steve and Jim and their access to information.
Right.
And if they want it faster, then they need to pay more. It also, the fear is the people who already don't have great access to the internet. How does this impact, you know, low income communities, urban centers, things like
rural
that.
Rural centers.
Rural, yeah.
For a guy who was like, hanging out in West Virginia 2 weeks ago and was off the grid literally without any contact for 36 hours.
Like, I'm back. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. It was, well.
Are you okay?
When I drove back into coverage, my phone just started going berserk.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I mean, Daniel,
because you're so popular.
Because there's so many garbage notifications.
But yeah, so I mean, I think it's something that we watch out for. I think it was worth. Listen, I think it was worth the fight and the pushback. I mean, look, we
if nothing else for the exposure, right? Well, now people at least know it's there.
Well, yeah, I mean, but we do. You and I do a podcast, and we have a website, and we would like to get that message out to more people. And this is the type of thing that makes it harder for our little thing to grow into something bigger, you know, because right. it puts access in the control of people with deep, deep pockets, you know, and you and I don't have the deep pockets to run up against a Verizon and say, you know, give us unfettered access right. and give, you know what I mean? Like that's not the way it works. So there's definitely some concerns there across the board.
I do think this is a perfect example, though, of. One side is saying there's nothing to worry about, nothing to see here, and the other side is saying the sky is falling and the truth lies very
directly
much in the middle.
Yeah.
All right. I was just getting kicks out of some of the meltdowns, and I do get it. But we should have a segment just called This Week in Trump. Of course, everyone else has it too. But he had a weird thing today, right? So he attended the FBI's graduation ceremony. Shortly after calling the FBI a disaster, claiming that they were wasting millions of taxpayer dollars on a farce, we talked about the whole, FBI agent that got fired from the Mueller investigation last show. Don't need to repeat that. But his attacks on the FBI obviously are personally motivated by the fact that the FBI is investigating collusion with the Russians during his campaign.
That, and, you know, Comey wouldn't pledge allegiance
right,
to
right,
him and
right.
all, you know, the whole thing.
And those are largely intertwined, though, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Who's going to suck Trump's dry dick?
Well, you know how much I hate the style of argument, but I can only imagine what the reaction on the right would be if Obama had called the FBI a disaster.
Somebody probably would have assassinated Obama by now if he would have done the shit that Trump is doing. Let's just be real.
Certainly, there would be a very, I mean, if you want to argue, you know, right, left, whatever, there's no way that Obama says the shit he said about the highest law enforcement branch in the country and not get, you know, Andrew Wilkow would be losing his fucking mind.
It would be treason.
Oh, yeah.
And they exactly. would literally be trying to try him for treason.
Yes. But because it's Trump, it's
Well, you know? I mean, it's a corrupt agency, and we just need to get rid of the whole thing.
That's right. I mean, he called. Right?
According to some of these conservatives, we'll call Breitbart. It all just needs to be taken down. Like, they don't agree with us. They're investigating us. It just all needs to go away, right? Like, I mean, it's just like, all right, I wish that's the way things work, right? Like, if I don't like something, right, then I just make it go away, right? You know what, officer? Screw you and your fake news speeding ticket. You just need to go away. You know, your
IRS,
whole...
I decided I don't like paying taxes anymore.
Right.
So, like, I'm not going to do that, and you just need to accept
it. And your
it.
Agency needs to go away, and it needs to be torn down because you are frustrating me from doing whatever I want.
Again, I hate that style of argument. I hate that, well, if our guy did it, blah, blah, blah argument. But I can't help but do it in this case because it's fucking ridiculous. And it does sound like there's some issue. So today Trump said that he would not rule out, but he did his famous "we'll see" when asked if he would consider pardoning Mike Flynn. Again, playing that game.
I almost, with Mike Flynn, do I care? You know, no, not really.
Well, do you care if he gets pardoned?
Right. Do I? I mean,
I certainly don't consider him a threat to society, but in terms of the impact to the judicial process, I do care. I don't care if he gets pardoned. I care if he gets silenced. If his pardon is on the understanding that he will no longer work with the FBI in the or with the Mueller investigation, that would bother me. And I think that's
on him,
though.
That's on him.
Isn't it something to the fact that if they pardon him, he can no longer plead the fifth? Right?
You can, I don't know, man.
All right.
I honestly don't know. I consult
with Dave Chappelle on this.
I plead the fifth.
So, did you hear Putin's remarks about Trump in public?
Yeah.
I don't know why they think that I would do such a thing. This Donald Trump, he's doing great things. Look at their economy. He's basically parroting the same shit Trump parrots about himself.
Yes.
And Trump really liked hearing it.
No shit.
Really did.
I mean, in the, you know, the funny, he was like, anyone who's against Trump is against America and blah, 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 blah. Like,
yeah, thanks,
Vladimir really Putin is so worried about American interests. Right. I mean, he's just so worried about it. I don't know. I think it's
gotten surreal in that regard, right? Can you believe the Russian president is complimenting the American president and the American president is saying, thank you, civilians in our country, our mutual countries, can't you just listen to the two of us and trust us?
That is happening. And by remarkable, I mean it's fucking stupid. Like, it just...
We are living in a reality TV show.
Yes, we are. The truth of the matter is, if you look at Russia's actions throughout the world, they're clearly not our ally. You know, now they're not necessarily our enemy, but they're not worried about our interests. They're worried about their own interests. And, you know, Putin literally talking out of two sides of his mouth. And the fact that Trump is just completely oblivious to it, soaks it all up. Oh, look at this. Oh, Putin's a pretty smart guy. He pumps me up. That means he's got to be bright. Like, it's unbelievable that this is the situation that we're in, that this, you know, this is the leadership of our country. And there are people out there defending this guy left and right. I just, mind blown.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that the mind blown is actually an emoji. I use it often. Head blown off.
Oh, okay. Well, it's where we are. And so often I love it when one of us, catches. We watch a lot. We both watch and get news from multiple sources, a lot of the same sources. So a lot of times, you know, you'll get something just before me or I'll get something just before you and we'll text it back and forth. But occasionally one of us gets to see something before the other and we get to connect and I get to see your live reaction to it. And today was one of those rare occasions and I loved it because Donald Trump nominated a guy to be a district court justice, I want to say in Virginia. And he was going through the, the confirmation process. Is it considered the confirmation process or just the review process?
I didn't even know what it was. By
Senator Kennedy. And he was being asked questions that, according to, I watched this on CNN, according to Jake Tapper, like, okay, some of these questions were procedural things that might be a bit obscure, but some of them were not. And then I played it for you, and I got to watch your reaction. and it was fantastic.
Yeah, so you got Matthew Spencer Peterson, who's being presented as a nominee, as a potential nominee for a district judgeship. And, I mean, the guy is completely unprepared, and he sounds like someone who, you know,
was sick the day they taught law in law school.
Yeah, like he went to law school, got out, and then has kind of been probably handed some pretty nice gigs along the way, and now he's found himself, you know, in this position, and he's ill prepared. Now we have sound of this sort of you know, grilling. I don't know what the formal layout was. It looks like some sort of a panel. But you want to
mind you, this is Senator John Kennedy, Republican from Louisiana. So this isn't like, you know, throwing him to the hounds.
Yeah.
Ready?
I mean, this is someone who should be favorable to him.
In theory.
And he throws some stuff out there. And as this goes, I'll have some comments on some of this stuff, but go ahead.
Have you ever tried a jury trial?
I have not.
Civil?
No.
Criminal?
No.
Bench?
No.
State or federal court?
I have not.
Okay. Have you ever taken a deposition?
He's supposed to be a judge, by the way, folks.
I wasn't.
Have you ever seen A Few Good Men?
Have you ever watched Law and Order?
Involved in taking depositions when I was associate at Wiley Ryan when I first came out of law school. But that was...
Wiley Ryan disavows any knowledge of...
many depositions?
I would... I'd be struggling to...
I walk past
to remember.
I walk past the door.
Yes.
Less than five?
Probably somewhere in that range.
Have you ever tried taking a deposition by yourself?
No. I believe no.
Okay.
I believe no.
Have you ever argued a motion in state court?
I have not.
Have you ever argued a motion in federal court?
No.
Okay. Have you ever been to court?
I got a traffic ticket once.
When's the last time you read the federal rules of civil procedure?
The federal rules of civil procedure. I have, in my current position, I obviously don't need to stay as, invested in those on a day-to-day basis, but I do try to keep up to speed. We do have at the Federal Election Commission roughly 70 attorneys who work under our guidance, including a large litigation division. And as a commissioner, we oversee that litigation. We advise them on overall legal strategy, provide recommendations
and snacks. They also provide snacks
and so forth, and meet with them about how we're going to handle it.
If I could ask you this, sure. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we're only given 5 minutes for five of you. So,
sure.
When's the last time you read the federal rules of evidence?
The federal rules of evidence all the way through?
All of them?
Well, comprehensively would have been in law school. Obviously, I have been involved in, when I was an associate, that was... something that we had to stay closely abreast of. And there have been some issues dealing with evidentiary issues that will cause me to examine those periodically in our oversight role of the litigation division at the Federal Election Commission.
Okay. Well, as a trial judge, you're obviously going to have witnesses.
Yes.
Can you tell me what the Daubert standard is?
This guy has no idea.
Senator Kennedy, I don't have that readily at my disposal, but I would be happy to take a closer look at that.
Okay.
That is not something that I've had to contend with.
Do you know what a motion in limine is?
Yes, I haven't. My background is not in litigation.
So, yeah, your background's not in litigation. No shit. A lot of people are just like, hey, what the fuck was that, right? Like, I mean, like, what? You don't have to be a lawyer to know that that guy wasn't prepared for that sort. And that wasn't, listen, the last two things there where he says, can you explain to me what the Daubert standard is, and do you know what a motion in limine is, right? He sets the guy up by saying, listen, you're going to have to deal with witnesses. Do you know what the Daubert standard is, right? The Daubert standard is essentially a rule, it's an evidentiary rule that you would use that as a there's a motion that you would file to prevent, like, if basically bad evidence from being presented to the jury, right? You say, like,
this doesn't have a level of credibility.
This evidence doesn't meet the rules of the rules of that, which he asked him about, like, hey, are you up to date on the federal rules of evidence or civil procedure? Are you up on anything that you would need to be up on to have this job? No? Okay, are you at least familiar with the basic rules, right? The standards, you know, the Daubert standard, where you can't have a shitty witness come up and tell, you know, in front of the jury and give them bad, you know, give them bad evidence, right? Are you familiar with that? No. Are you familiar with the motion in limine? Well, a motion in limine is, like, the Daubert standard is essentially a motion in limine, right? A motion in limine is a motion that you would file and say, hey, we need to do this away from the jury because we want to prevent bad information from getting into this case that you know, we don't want the jurors.
You can
to
say
have
it's going
to
be stricken, but you right. can say I mean, that all you want.
Right.
You
I mean, it. If I say something ridiculous in court and then you say, all right, strike it from the record, well, there are lawyers who use that all the time. They know that it's going to be stricken from the record, but they know that the jury is also going to hear it because, and they use that to influence it happens all the time.
I recently was on a jury and there was plenty of that.
And so, yeah.
God, you're only laughing because you know the lawyer.
Don't get me started. So, you know, that's what, you know, those simple, like, if you're going to be a judge, right, a district judge in, you know, civil cases, you should probably be aware of the federal rules of civil procedure. Like, if I'm going into that, that panel, right, and that's me sitting there and there, I know I'm going to be asked questions, like, this didn't just get sprung on this guy. He didn't just find out yesterday that he was going to be up there today. He should have been reviewing the federal rules of civil procedure. He should have been reviewing the rules of evidence. You have to anticipate that stuff is going to come up, and be up to date with any, you know, amendments and changes to those, you know, to those rules, because again, that's going to be your guidebook and how you do your job, right? I mean, like, listen, what being an attorney isn't, let me memorize everything and so I know it all in my head. No, it's being able to go and find information, and when information changes, being aware of it. And this guy, I don't know how he got his job with the Federal Election Committee. I don't know what his, I mean, he literally sounds like somebody, he went to law school, he got a couple decent jobs out of the gate because he probably was a decent law student.
Probably knew the right people.
Right, I mean, right, he's probably a blue blood, you know, I mean, was in the right circles and kind of never did anything of note, but kept getting kind of passed up the ladder, and now he's here, you know, and I think that was, you know, he's probably, if that guy ends up on the bench, then I quit. I absolutely quit. I cannot, like, because not for any other reason than just, like, I can't. What if I have to deal with him, right? Like, if he, it's just,
oh, no,
like,
that would be so great. That's all the reason you can't quit.
Right. It's just like, are you serious? Like, I know that you're an idiot, right? Like, I know that you're an idiot, and you should not be on the stand. So that would probably cause me some trouble. but that just kind of goes to, you know, they're trying to sneak this guy in. He's ill-prepared. He doesn't know what he's doing. And there's a lot of that going on with the Trump administration. You have a lot of people who are ill-prepared, who don't know, and a lot of people think that that's good, right? Like, we want to drain the swamp.
Right.
We can't have
the career, but you need to have judges who know how to be judges.
Right. I, there's nothing wrong with the judge who knows the law.
So kudos to two people here, two organizations here. Senator John Kennedy from Louisiana for recognizing that this guy ain't qualified and calling him out and asking the right questions.
Listen, I don't even know if that's... I don't think Kennedy was trying to make that guy look bad. That's the worst part about it. Kennedy was throwing this guy softballs, and watching the video and watching his face, the dismay of, you don't know what a motion in limine is, and you want to be a fucking judge? Like, and I don't mean to talk, like, if you're not a lawyer and you're not in the legal realm, you're not going to know it. Right, or maybe you do. I don't know. We have some sophisticated listeners.
You and I talked before we got on air, and you said, "Do you know what that is?" And I said, "No." And then you said, "Okay." And I said, "Wait a minute. Is that?" I think I pulled, like, literally something out of Law and Order and said, "Is this what it is?" And you're
exactly.
Like, "Yeah."
I mean, for the most part, I mean, you know, I mean, you got a big part of it, which is, you know, it's a motion away from the jury.
Right.
Absolutely, it's a motion away from the jury to prevent, you know, evidence that doesn't meet the standard from coming in, and
I got closer than this guy.
Exactly. Like, you got, I mean, I don't know if you can spell law school. So I
I wrote it right there.
I can spell it. You son of a bitch.
You son of
a... So it's kind of funny. It's not. It's scary that they're putting... That's like, these are the type of people who are bunny, who are being pushed into or being... you know, held...
Snuck through.
Yeah, who are being sucked through. I mean,
and so credit to the press for calling this out. I mean, part of what we're doing is laughing at this guy for looking like a dope, but without the press and without Senator Kennedy asking these questions and getting recorded and getting shown to us, this guy waltzes into a federal...
Right, federal court. Yeah. Now, here's the thing. Going back to net neutrality. You know, AT&T made it difficult for people to have access to YouTube early on, and it's because... of net neutrality that we all have access to YouTube, right? So where net neutrality comes in is if, let's say you have an internet service provider who says, you know what, YouTube takes up a lot of bandwidth.
Which it certainly does.
And they decide that you have, if you're going to use it, then you have to pay more, right? Or and maybe it's some ridiculous cost. So now if I don't pay for it, then there's a lot of people out there who wouldn't have access to this, who wouldn't be able to go find this. You know, I mean, you listen to our show, you can go look it up. You know, the guy's name is Matthew Spencer Peterson. You know, you look up that and, you know.
YouTube Trump judicial nominee, and it's right up front
right there. And so, but there are people, like, it with if net, you know, if the internet service providers do the wrong thing or do what they're, you know, being accused of thinking about doing, then we won't have access to information like that, which is why it's important.
And it's good right now. We have, you know, three major and multiple minor players. But how many times have we seen industries gobbling each other up to the point where there's, you know, suddenly down to one or two?
Well, I mean, I think one of the best examples of, you know, a failure of antitrust law in the United States and you know, around the world, SiriusXM.
Right.
There's only one satellite radio provider. You had XM and you had Sirius. One, I think Sirius bought XM, and now there's only one.
Yeah.
There's nowhere else there's nowhere else that you can get, you know, commercial free, you know, radio.
FCC, FCC controlled.
Right. I mean,
radio, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's only one. And I mean, you know, a lot of that is, you know, Howard Stern and blah, 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 yada, yada. But fine. But there's only one. And to me, that sucks. Right. I got to pay $250 a year, which isn't that much. If you do, you know, if you do it out, it's a, you know, what is it?
20 bucks a month. Yeah.
Or whatever it is. But it still kind of sucks because sometimes I get annoyed with Sirius and it would be nice to have another option. But because there's not, like, you're going to continue, you're going to pay a premium on it because where else are you going to go? Right, I mean, you're gonna go back to Clear Channel, right? You're gonna go back to regular radio where it's pretty much only Clear Channel, and you listen to these dopey DJs and people like Rover and all that shit in the morning, or what? No, so
well, you know, I'm a fan of the Alan Cox Show, so I'm gonna throw a bone to them. I know you didn't. No, you didn't. But that's the only time I'm not listening to satellite radio is when I'm listening to that. Yeah, mm-hmm. So we'll find out if any of our friends from that show. Listen to us because we just threw them a bone.
Did we?
I don't know really, but
we threw them a bone. Okay,
whatever. But you're right, and it is to me. It's maybe veering too far off the road, but it bothers me on a fundamental level that we have different sets of rules for terrestrial radio and satellite radio in terms of what you're allowed to say. The idea that you can't say certain words on the radio just bugs the shit out of me.
It's hilarious because, like, so because the transmitter's on the ground, I can't say shit.
But right.
You put a satellite in the sky and I could say,
I'll fuck you
in the ass and rape your eyes. Right? Like, I mean.
You could say that. I'd prefer you didn't, but you could say that. But it's crazy, right? And the same thing with network TV versus certain kinds of cable. I mean, look, I get trying to protect the delicate ears of children. But that's what it is.
No, you don't.
No, I don't. You're right.
You don't.
You're right. I mean, it. Like, I. All right. So let's talk about our show. We have a show on multiple podcast platforms, and we're not required, but we're told based on the nature of our show to put a little E in there that says explicit, which means we can say whatever the fuck we want. Mm-hmm. If we didn't have that, we would not be breaking any laws, but we could get in trouble with our carriers. You know, iTunes and Stitcher and iHeart could say, you know, we asked you to put this little disclaimer there. You didn't do it. So, you know, we got complaints and there could be backlash. But literally, there are laws against the Alan Cox show. When the Alan Cox show, whenever they say something's bullshit, they have to say, they say bull shrimp, which is just so silly to me.
Right.
That I mean, you have
like
to
they
do
have
that.
To have a dump button, and you know, there's a lag time so that, you know, if someone does, like if a caller calls in and says something inappropriate, they can block it out. And
All,
I mean, it's crazy. And I agree with you. It's ridiculous.
We're being, it's just one of the other things, we're just being children as a society.
But I think, I think Sirius is going to sit, Sirius is going to fight that tooth and nail and say, hey, because of that, we have a cottage industry. So we want to keep that in place so that you have a reason to come to us.
True. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of Howard Stern. I'm not even a minor fan of. I don't hate him. I don't really like him.
I can't even. I couldn't find Howard Stern on. I don't even know what channel he's on.
Channel 100 on SiriusXM.
Okay. I had no idea. I skip. I mean, I got the sports channels in the 80s, and then I go to the political talk and
120s,
you know, all
or
that
whatever,
stuff in the 120s, and then I got my hip hop shit in the 40s. And then some of my classical stuff, and then when my daughter's in the car with me, I got Disney.
Okay,
that's.
But anyway, you do have to give Howard Stern credit for having.
I want to be where the people are.
This is not helping.
Thingamabobs?
I have no idea what you're talking about. I don't have kids,
Little
therefore.
Mermaid. It's Little Mermaid. Mermaid.
I've actually seen Little Mermaid, but in college, twice, trying to get laid, unsuccessfully.
Weird. Who were you trying to get laid by?
Her name was Debbie.
Roy.
Roy?
Moore?
Oh, geez. I was in college with a college girl.
Okay. Well,
Little Mermaid came out when I was in college.
All you said was, I was in college and I'm watching The Little Mermaid trying to get laid. Who are you trying to fucking get laid
watching? My college age girlfriend who made me watch that piece of shit movie twice in 2 days.
Okay.
Her name was Debbie. I forget her last name.
Okay.
Doesn't matter.
Dallas?
Yes, she, no. All right, anyway. So speaking of ridiculous shit that we shouldn't care about, Prince Harry and whoever are...
Meghan Markle.
Meghan, okay. So many people care so much about this, and to be honest, it's funny to me. It bothers me that people care, and I don't know why, because I'm kind of being a hypocrite, because why do I care that people care?
Right.
It's so irrelevant to me. Fucking kings and queens and princes... Fucking, who cares? It's 2017.
Oh, no,
why?
Man. Listen, all I know is that I want to be. Listen.
If I was a prince, it'd be fucking awesome. I'd be all for it, but I'm not.
I want to be on the money. I want to be on the money. I want my face on money. Queen Elizabeth's face is on the money, right? One of those bastards, Harry or William, their face may be on the money. I want my face on the money.
What was Eddie Murphy's name in Coming to America?
Hakim.
What? Okay.
Of Zamunda.
The Prince of Zamunda. Yes.
I
know you want that.
You don't
want to be on American money, because to be on American money, you have to be white and dead.
Well, Harriet Tubman is apparently making a run at the 20.
But you have to be dead.
True.
And that's.
And there's got to be some relation to slavery.
And right there's somewhere in there.
Not a win to be on. Yeah. It is not a win to be on American money. Not for me.
The only guy on the right side of that is Lincoln. No, Kennedy's on some stuff.
Yeah, Kennedy is on some
dimes
stuff.
And also dead. And Roosevelt also dead.
But all of them dead. So anyway.
Anyway, yes.
It's not a huge deal. I think. I mean, listen. I don't have a problem with it. It's innocent fun for people to, it's grown ups and their princesses and kings and queens.
You're
all
right.
That shit. It's not a huge deal. I think there are some different implications there. Meghan Markle, I think her mom is black and her dad is white. And so she's mixed progressive black circles, there are conversations about what this means, because there's some, like my mom is obsessed with the royal family. You know, she was a big Princess Diana fan. She is one of those people who loves the idea of these big, gaudy weddings and, seeing what stars show up and all that stuff. Well, it's just innocent fun, right? It's no different than watching the Oscars and, the red carpet and all that sort of stuff. And I guess I don't have a big problem with it. But in progressive black circles, in your different, forums and groups, there are conversations about this and why, about Meghan Markle because she is half black, but she doesn't really identify as black. She identifies herself as mixed race. And if, you know, like if you looked at her, if it, you know, I guess if you look at her and her lifestyle and who she surrounds herself with, she clearly identifies with her white heritage much more than her black heritage. And while, you know, she will probably say that she's proud of, you know, her black, you know, whatever, she definitely is more.
She's chosen a pretty white circle to run into this whole thing,
like,
right?
Right. I mean, like, you're marrying Prince Harry, right? This is the whitest of the white families. So, obviously, you know, and to me, that's digging in the weeds on it, and I don't know if that has a cultural implication. I don't know if I care if it really matters. I don't think that, you know, Meghan Markle deciding that she's going to identify black and not marry Prince Harry and decide that she's going to go find herself a, you know, Tyrone Hill to go marry. I don't know if that really has a play anywhere. I don't know if it matters. Some people will tell you that it's, you know, destroying the black family structure even more, and which is part of the problem. I don't agree with that argument.
It's too strong of an argument.
You know, I don't necessarily agree with that. I don't think it's the end of the world. I don't really care.
That's where I'm at.
I think it's just, you know, if you want to obsess about this, and is it a waste? In my book, it's a waste of time, only because I don't really give a shit.
I love the movie The Naked Gun when Frank Drebin is being introduced as the person protecting the Queen, and he's doing a speech, and he says essentially, we're, you know, police squad, we're happy to protect the Queen because no matter how stupid the idea of having a queen might sound to us, we as Americans must be gracious hosts. That's right. How I feel about it.
Yeah. I mean, all right, go ahead. You know,
Frank Drebin, do your thing. Police squad.
But yeah, I mean, I guess you could, you know, really dig into the optics. Now, there, you know, when it was first announced, there were some, you know, pretty shitty things that were said about Meghan Markle because she was, you know, some of the, you know, kind of second and third tier. Gossip columns and things out of the UK said some kind of nasty shit about her because she was half black.
They're brutal over there too.
Even there was some stuff over here. And again, you go to the comment section of, you know, any of these articles and things like that.
I can only imagine, and it
got pretty ugly, and that sucks. And that's kind of part of the problem. It's a big part of the problem. And people say, well, you know, it's a comment section. I wouldn't read that. That's not anything. And I will tell you that there's so much information.
That's the real pulse of America.
You want to call me on it, but
no,
listen,
I'm not.
Listen,
actually, no.
Breitbart built their everything that they have right now. They built it on that comment section of their website and of you know and their Twitter. Like, you listen,
you're misreading my reaction.
I know. I I'm not yelling at you. I'm just saying, like, the reality is Stephen Bannon. I was listening to Breitbart just the other day. He said our movement was built on the comment section of our readers were telling us what they wanted to hear and what they wanted to see, and we took that and we created a movement out of it. And if you go to their comment section now, some of it, you know, like, you get arguments back and forth, but that's where you get, because people aren't going to hold back. They're anonymous and unfiltered. They're anonymous and unfiltered. They can say and do whatever they want. They can be the person that they wish they could be in their day-to-day lives and say what they want to say.
Wasn't for all this political correctness, I could really speak my mind, but right. Now I don't know if I get that accent.
And all that sort of shit. And people come out and they reveal their ugliest self. And that's, Breitbart took that and they ran with it. And that's why you go back to 2016 and we were talking about the election, and I said, listen, there's a real chance that this guy could win because people are buying into his bullshit, and everyone's like, I don't know, I think you're just kind of whatever, Hillary's going to win in a landslide. And, I mean, we did the show. That's when we started.
It's on record.
You know, I mean, shortly thereafter, and I'm like, man, I don't know. I really think that this could be something, and people are looking at me like I'm crazy, and I'm like, no, it's right there. It's right in front of you. And so going to the comment section, looking at the worst of the worst, it gives you an idea of what people are thinking. And that's the scary part. Now,
in this case,
we can go back to just Roy Moore in Alabama. The problem with that is it was all over the place. People hated him. people loved them. People didn't know. They were up in the air. And I think that's when you know shit is really in flux, is when you get no vibe whatsoever. You know, there's no straight line down. It's just zigzag back and forth.
And I didn't want to bring this up, but as of this recording, Roy Moore still has not conceded the election, despite Trump saying, dude, give it up.
Dude, Doug Jones will be going for re-election, and Roy Moore will not have conceded this election. Come on. The dude rode to the polls on a horse, Jim.
Yes. But, you know, he does something that drives me nuts, and this could totally go off the rails, but...
Try to finger bang 14-year-old girls.
Well, there's that. All right, that's wrong. Annoying. That's wrong. But what... When he's talking, it's in God's hands now. Like, all right, well, then God has spoken, dude, because you're out.
Right. And actually, it's not. God tossed that out of his hands a while ago.
But, you know, trying to turn this into something religious just nauseates the fuck out of me. It's like, dude, you're not divinely chosen. If you do believe in that, you were divinely unchosen. Shut the fuck up.
So, anyway, besides all that, we'll go from... Alabama to Oklahoma.
Pretty easy transition. One's a little drier.
A little flatter. So you had Rodney Anderson. Rodney Anderson is a running back from Oklahoma University. Oklahoma's about to go bowling. They're going to be in the college football playoff. The quarterback just won the Heisman Trophy. And right before their conference championship game, their running back was accused of rape. A very serious allegation, and he said, hey, listen, I'm innocent, and I have proof, which most people who say that they, you know, have been accused of rape will tell you that they're innocent. You know, probably 90% of the time they end up being found guilty. It is what it is. But in this particular instance, the way it played out was, you know, Rodney, essentially he had sex with someone on the OU staff. I don't know what she did for them, media something. And a couple weeks after, she came out and said she raped him, and she was so drunk.
He raped her.
He raped her. She didn't remember until 2 weeks later, and, you know, pretty horrid stuff. He's like, nope, not how it happened at all. He's like, I had sex with her, but it was consensual. I have proof. He took a lie detector test. He passed it, and people were like, all right, well, that doesn't matter. Maybe you're just a good liar. Well, the evidence came out. They did hook up. They had sex. She was really excited about it. She texted him. They had a normal text relationship back and forth. She bragged to her friends. Multiple friends of hers said that she came to them and was like, I spent time with so-and-so. We did XYZ. It was great. She wanted to turn it into a relationship long-term. He wasn't interested. So then, scorned, she drops a rape allegation on him. And... you know, all this evidence comes out. It's false. Now, there are people who wanted her to be charged with something. I think she should have been. I think that's important but the problem is...
That's such a dangerous game to play, right?
It's a dangerous play, right? Because, because then it may prevent
people... You don't want to scare people who legitimately have a case
But the problem is she is part of the problem, because this is why people are going to say, I don't know if I can believe... a Roy Moore accuser. I don't know if I'm going to believe an accuser because
Harvey Weinstein's girls could all be lying.
Right. And listen, this isn't the first time that you've had an accuser, do this with a football player. You know, last year, Garyon Conley, he was an Ohio State running back cornerback. He was here in Cleveland. He was at the Barley House with the girl, left. They went to the Westin, had a night.
And that's right.
She left, and then she accused him of rape after the fact, and she said he cornered her in an elevator and took her to his room, and she didn't know.
And the video ended up showing them.
The video showed that they met at the Barley House and left together, and then there were other things like text messages along as well. And so you've got two cases in less than a year of false accusations, and that's what you have, and that's why. You know, I think to your point that you've been making the last month is there are degrees to these allegations, and we can't attack a guy who is drunk at a party and grabs a girl's breast with a Harvey Weinstein who's cornering women, threatening
a serial rapist,
right? Yeah. Who's a serial rapist and trying to manipulate people's career.
Okay, fine. You throw it out there if you want.
But I mean, there are degrees. It all varies. And I think we have to look at these situations when these allegations come out. Each one of them, we have to look at it at the individual merits, at the fact pattern, at what happened, and make a decision. We can't just say, "Oh, well, there's a
she
claim.
Said it, it's true.
She said it,
or
it's
he said
true,
it is true,
or whatever." And then we run with it and say, "Yep, they're guilty as charged. Get rid of them. You have to quit." Right? I mean, I think we have to look at it now. It seems like here, cooler heads prevailed. They didn't go crazy and, you know, kick him out of school and, you know, hold him over in jail. I have to imagine that he had the evidence pretty early, and the police knew it, and they had to do their due diligence, and they had to do both sides, and, you know, that's why
right.
It's taken a month or so. They wanted to be sure, you know, they wanted to make sure that they didn't have, you know, a rapist on their hands. And so, but I think at the same time, I'm sure he probably said, if she's saying I raped her, then on this night, well, these are the text messages that she sent me that night and the day after. And
you know, we talked last week about how dumb the folks were in the FBI for sending text messages and emails. But here's someone who didn't. She was scorned after the fact. So immediately she's content to send text messages, you know.
Right.
Great time with you, man. It was, you know, I don't know why I should say that. But send those text messages and then down
great time with you, man.
Apparently, I equate this with two dudes watching a football game together after. All right.
God, I have to be on the lookout for that awful text.
Yeah.
Great time with you, man. No, Jim.
No,
we're not having
no,
sex.
We're not. Damn it. It was all a trick.
time with you, man.
Okay. This is why. All right.
Anyway.
Yeah, moving on. So in this case, you know, justice preempted even a real ugly situation in court, and the truth came out. And we need to, like you said, judge things on a case by case basis. One thing I really got a kick out of this week though was Alonzo Ball, point guard for the LA Lakers, came and played a game against LeBron James here in Cleveland. It was a couple nights ago. It's funny, Alonzo Ball was 5 years old when LeBron entered the NBA. So, you know, he had previously said that LeBron was his hero, and you literally, since he was in kindergarten, he was watching LeBron James, and he then later became an all-star college and highly drafted NBA player. And LeBron's not truly a point guard, but they do have a lot of similarities in their games.
LeBron is whatever he wants to be.
That's true, there's that. So during the game, they spoke to each other on the floor, and they each pulled their jersey up to, like, you know, basically not get overheard and not get their lips read. And I thought it was kind of cool. I mean, we don't know what was said. I think LeBron basically said they just talked about, you know, good luck, welcome to the league.
We
kind
do
of
know
thing.
What was said. I mean, he said you have to, you know, I think he said a couple things, like you have to play hard every night, and don't let the outside noise, you know,
with dealing
with
the
head.
Shit with his dad and everything
well,
else.
Just, yeah, his dad, the media, whatever. Like he's like you just do you, and you know the devil is in the details of your craft. Get good at what you do, and the rest will come. Essentially, is what. Now I'm literally paraphrasing and putting shit in his mouth, but that's,
but you're
that's
quoting LeBron, and that may not be what he really said. Dun dun dun. There were a great bunch of great memes about what was actually said. My personal favorite,
the one with Lithuania.
Yeah,
don't even worry about it, though. We'll all be in Lithuania next year.
Yeah, and that if you don't know that story, it's because LeVar Ball, Alonzo Ball's dad, pulled his son out of UCLA after the shoplifting incident and subsequent suspension, and they're now going to play pro ball in Lithuania. So that's why that's hilarious to me.
And Lithuania, like just so you,
LeBron
just,
in Lithuania. Is
just
such a
so
fucking
you know,
awesome.
Lithuania basketball is about as good as
I don't know.
It's bad.
Is it
it's
okay?
Very
I,
bad.
Okay.
And I liken it
because there
to,
is some European basketball that's pretty good, like Italy.
There is,
Italy
but
and
Lithuania
Germany
is bad.
Is not
I'm
one
just
of them.
Telling you.
That's,
it's bad.
That's not surprising.
It's like you know handball in the hood. Not
it's,
good.
It's
that rhymed.
Is there a train? Is there a train coming here soon? Yes, very soon. They're building it now. That's from Eurotrip, which I watched the other day. but anyway, you know, so and the on the cool moment thing, think of what it's like for Alonzo Ball to literally walk up to his. If you got a chance to walk up to Jerome Bettis, is that a fair comparison?
Yeah, sure.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, no.
You got to walk up to the football field with Jerome Bettis and hear him. That's awesome.
Well, I see it all the time. And you know, football people, like fans of sports, get really upset with this when they see guys friendly after the game talk and they want to go back to the old days where, you know, apparently there was a time where guys would punch each other after games. I don't know because I don't know what people, what the expectation is. I remember the basketball I remember from the 80s after games is Magic Johnson hugging and kissing Larry Bird after games.
He literally kissed Isaiah Thomas before a game.
I don't know what this, you know, people have this thing like Michael Jordan, like if you want to say Michael Jordan was a special dick, right? I mean, he was a dick. And, you know, but this whole thing of, well, all these guys are talking, all these guys are friends. And they shake hands after games, and they don't spit on each other. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, when was that the case?
Have you ever had a competition against a good friend where you didn't want to beat them?
Yes.
Oh, have you? Okay.
Yeah, there was, and this is very particular. When I was in high school, I was a pretty well-rounded track athlete. I threw the shot put. You know, I was a state competitor in a shot put. You know, I was a state competitor in the 100-meter dash and the 200 in the 4x1. Our relay team was one of the best in the state. There was a kid who went to another school. He went to Champion, which is like a podunk town outside of Youngstown. He was a great K. He and I went back and forth, and he always came in second to me. Like I would beat him by like 3 feet, but he was the next best shot putter in the area. And there was a meet. It's such a bizarre story. Kid never knew his dad, and he finally met his dad, and his dad came to the Poland Invitational. And I was set to break the record at this meet, which was, I think, the record was like 64 feet or 63 feet or something like that. And I was consistently throwing, you know, 68, 69. And so I was going to break the record at this meet, and Nick was there, and I had talked to him, and he's like, yeah, you know, my dad's going to be here. I can't wait. Like, I want you to meet him. And this is just a kid I met through track.
Right. And competing against him.
Right. Always competing against them. And, you know, it was a running joke. You know, Steve's going to take first. Nick's going to take second. You know, it's a competition for third. And in this meet, because this kid's dad was there.
You sandbagged?
Sandbagged. I didn't throw. I ran the 100, and then they called me to go over, and I never went over. And he won, and he actually broke
the record. Did he break the record?
He broke the record. He's got it. And I didn't throw in that meet. I ran the 100. Actually,
did you get shit from your coach?
No.
Okay.
I mean, now, part of the reason was we won the meet as a team.
Okay.
I also took first in the 100. 4x1 team took first. I took first in the 200. So
good for you.
You know, I mean, it was.
But then you gave mouth-to-mouth resuscitation to that referee that passed out.
Saved a dying puppy. Helped a woman give birth to a midget baby.
Then you jerked off in public, which is the weird part. You managed to... Well,
it was a well-rounded day. Well-rounded day. That's how I get down.
I don't know why I had to take it there.
Anyway, it's a weird. It's a weird kind of divergence of the show. But that's the only time where, you know, in competition.
But to your point,
when you're competing against friends, you want to beat them.
Fuck yes.
Right. Whether it's video games.
I can't wait to call you the next day.
It's race or whatever. Like it's just, you know. I mean, I had a, you know, whether it's a friendly bet or we're whatever the challenge is or. You want to beat your friends,
and you give and I don't think I'm weird about this. I can literally, I mean, I've boxed people that I genuinely love, and I wanted to knock them the fuck out. Now I didn't want them to be hurt, but I wanted to land that shot that made them crumple to the ground, and then later on be going, oh, did that hurt worse? Or, yeah, I'm not a trash talker. normally. That sounds like bullshit at the moment, but you know what I'm saying? I want to win, but I don't have ill will towards the person. Yes. That, you know, it's on the field of play. I'm giving everything. So as soon as it's over, right, you're my friend.
Right. And so this, again, circling back to LeBron and the ball.
Lots of ball, yeah.
It's fine. And you know, people are like, oh, well, I mean, people are saying, well, that, you know, that's him talking to him means LeBron's going to LA.
Oh, you know, we just said, you know, what? That was one of the other great memes, right. Was which highway should I avoid in LA?
Right.
All of them.
I think LeBron is a seasoned vet. Dude's been in the league for
15 years.
Yeah, 15 years. And that's a long time to do any one job, folks.
Yeah.
And he is the elder statesman of the league. He is the Michael Jordan in the league right now. And he's a better politician than Michael Jordan ever was. And so he talks to the younger guys. Doesn't mean he's going there. Like, what are you going to do next week when he's talking to one of the guys in Philly, or if he's talking to one of the guys in Minnesota, or if he's talking to one, like, that's what he does. He has this, he feels a certain responsibility to give these kids advice. Because listen, you know, everyone thinks it's so easy to just go play sports and get paid a lot of money, right? And it's just like, oh, I would go and play in the NBA for free, blah, blah, blah. No, you wouldn't.
Oh, yeah, absolutely you would.
Right?
You'll be doing it for free.
Right, go, scamp. But the idea, you know, like playing sport, like your job is your body, and you know, when you're a professional athlete, and there, you have no idea what the pressure is. You know, I mean, like because you get in there and you're signing contracts, and all those contracts are performance based, and it's not sales numbers, it's not closings, it's your physical ability to perform. And oh, by the way, you got a wife or a girlfriend or a boyfriend or whatever. You got kids. You got people asking you for money. You got companies coming saying, hey, if you when you're getting interviewed, can you put our deodorant in your locker and turn it the right way? And you're like, wait, really? That's a thing? Like, yeah.
Yeah, that's a thing.
And then you sign the contract, and then you don't do it the right way, and they send you a letter like, if you don't do this, we're going to sue you for breach of contract. And you're like, wait, what? Because I didn't put my deodorant the right way in my locker? Like, that's the type of shit that you have to deal with. It's not just all fun and games. And, like, you're still playing a game, and you could say, oh, it's just a game. But when you're doing that game for your livelihood, shit gets real really quickly.
One of my favorite sports movies is Bull Durham. And at the end of that movie, Kevin Costner tells Tim Robbins, you need to play this game with fear and arrogance. And I love that line. It's just a follow-up line. I spared you the follow-up line when Tim Robbins says, fear and ignorance? No, you fucking hayseed, fear and arrogance. But that's kind of how you play, right? You're always worried about who's trying to come behind you, but yep. You got to have the confidence and the arrogance to say, I can do this.
Yep.
All right, man. We got to get going soon because you have plans tonight.
Yeah, bitch. You know what it is?
I do.
Dum, 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 dum. Dum, 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 dum,
I so wish dum, I could do a Chewbacca. Dum. I've always wanted to be able to do the brat, but I can't do it. That was my Chewbacca.
Okay.
Well, I know it sounded like a hideous burp. Again. It sounded like.
Don't do it again.
Imitating that or imitating black women, which was better?
So there is an quote, like, the rule of the show is you can't imitate black women. If you do, I get to hit you with whatever bottle I can find. You can't do it.
There's no anti-Chewbacca rule.
There's no anti-Chewbacca rule, but don't do that again.
I wish I could do it. Anyway, yes, you're going to see Star Wars.
I can't wait. It's been two fucking years.
I'll have to admit. So Star Wars is like it's everyone's wheelhouse, but I think it came out in 77. I was 6 years old.
Star Wars, yes.
The original Star Wars.
Yep.
Mind-blowing at the time. I mean, you look back at it now, and things have changed so much.
It's kind of cheesy, but the story's still great.
Yeah, and it's a simple story, but it's a classic, you know, good guy versus bad guy story. And then Empire Strikes Back is great. And I do have a problem with the fucking Ewoks, but I won't go there.
There's some issues with Return of the Jedi.
I can't lie. Teddy bears with spears are going to fight the most invincible galactic power ever and win.
The question is, who braided Leia's hair?
Okay, that is not the question, but it is a legitimate question.
How did this happen? Like, I mean, those are some pretty intrinsic braids. Like, I don't know.
With those little nubby furry fingers,
I don't know who did it.
R2-D2 could have had a braid feature. Anyway, so you're going to see Star Wars tonight. Yeah. I mean, the second set of three, in my opinion, mostly sucked. There were some cool moments in them.
The last, so the last one of the mid 2000s,
Clone Wars.
Yeah, the clone, like the last one where Anakin.
It was the best of those.
Yeah, where Anakin
turns
to Darth Vader. I thought that one was really good.
It was better than the previous two.
The two were not the two before that were not good. But the Clone Wars was good. And then, you know, listen, I thought they did a great job with the last one. I'm really excited about tonight. I thought Rogue One was really good. If you haven't seen Rogue One, it's a spinoff standalone story. Spoiler alert, if you haven't seen Rogue One.
Stop listening.
Everybody dies.
Okay. Like, I didn't know that. I haven't seen
everybody
it.
Everybody
I've not seen it. So it's basically like The Departed for Star Wars?
Yeah, like, so the funny
spoiler
thing is,
number two.
When the movie came out, before I saw it, people were...
And Bruce Willis can't see any of... No.
People were asking about the sequel to Rogue One. And at first I thought that, like, I didn't know. You know, I hadn't seen it. And then I watched it. I'm like, who the fuck thought there was going to be a sequel after
there,
this?
There were people who thought there'd be a sequel to The Departed. I'm like, what? Mark Wahlberg
who?
Opens a bar?
Right.
And Alec Baldwin is banned? I mean, what's...
Mark Wahlberg opens a bar.
Alec
Baldwin is banned.
Alec Baldwin.
But he's banging the girl that... The psychiatrist.
Right. There we go.
Which, I don't know. Maybe we could do something
actually,
with that.
I think we just struck gold right there.
Scorsese hit me up.
First heard on Whiskey Congress podcast, Scorsese. We got you. So anyway, cool, man. You're going to see it. I'll be looking.
Yeah.
I'll be torn because I will not like race out to see it. I will. I did think the last Star Wars movie was cool. It kind of got ruined for me because I turned it on when it was on, you know, HBO or one of those things when I first watched it. And I turned it on right as, spoiler alert, they found Luke. And I'm like, okay, that was the shocker at the end. And as I, when I watched it from the beginning, I'm like, and now I know where this leads to. But it's still cool. It's still fun to watch.
Yeah, no, it's, I can't wait.
Does the Carrie Fisher factor get in your head?
Yeah, it does. Because I want to know how they have to kill her off. And so how are they going to do that? I think I have an idea how they might do it.
It sucks that she's dead. I mean, I'm not saying...
I'm sure she agrees.
She probably would, yes. No, but you know what I'm saying, though? It's
yeah, it does. You know, I have a special place in my heart for Carrie Fisher because, you know, she kind of found a reprieve and rebounded with Seth MacFarlane and Family Guy and American Dad. She did a couple voices there. And they were in, you know, her contributions were memorable. And then reading her story, you know, before she died, there were a number of stories that had come out, and she had done articles, and, you know, she talked about her battle with
addiction
and drugs and alcohol, but she was just a real woman. She talked about, listen, I just like to have a good time, and sometimes shit sucks, and I took it too far, and I dealt with things the bad way, but the wrong way, but at the end of the day. I think in one of her interviews, she said, listen, I like to have a good time. I like to get laid and I like making money. You know, I mean, it's just like, I can respect all of that.
Yeah.
You know,
her and the gold,
Carrie, this line's for you.
Her and the gold bikini. How dare you? Her and the gold bikini was like the first real sex symbol thing kids my age saw. That was the first thing. I mean, there was Charlie's Angels and there was all that shit, but that was the first thing you went to the movies and went, bong. Yes, I made that sound effect. And, the look of despair is awesome. Don't you dare get shitty with me. You talked about I fucking earlier. All right.
I said I rape.
Oh, sorry. That makes it so much better. Non-consensual.
I was going to rape her eyes.
Non-consensual I fucking. Okay. makes it so much better.
Don't be an asshole, Jim.
How dare I? On that note, we talked a little bit about Omarosa's departure from the White House, and you gave me a little bit of shit about some of the comments I repeated when I tried to imitate the black woman in her remark. So I will not try to do an accent or anything. I don't even need to. I found it very funny to watch Robin Roberts asked about that.
Well, and Robin Roberts, she was an ESPN personality for years. She's a cancer survivor. She's now on the ABC Morning Show or whatever.
Good Morning America?
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't watch.
I don't watch them either.
Just because I'm at work. So
right.
But she's a well respected. She's a black woman. And Omarosa gets booted from the White House. However that happened, and Robert gets hit her with a bye Felicia.
Bye Felicia. Love it.
Which I thought was funny. And you know, and Robin Roberts has always been very real. I miss her at ESPN. She still does some things for them. They're hard to watch though, because she's just, you know, ESPN does this thing where I feel like, you know, Saturday mornings when it's not football season, it's just like, all right, let's try to make dudes cry. Let's find stories about sick cancer kids, and you know, I mean, right. she's at the heart of a lot of those stories as a cancer survivor. You know, you watch these stories. You know, I have a thing with one of my buddies from Chicago. You know, Gia, you met him, and he texts me. He's like, "Hey, how's your Saturday going?" And I'm like, "Okay." He's like, "You balling?" I'm like, "Yeah, just cried my eyes out. Can't believe that kid didn't make it." Like, you know, you watch these stories, and they do a phenomenal job of telling these stories. And I want them to keep doing it, but sometimes it can be hard to watch, and I don't know why I subject myself to it. You know, because you get to rooting for these kids, and they're like, "And little Timmy died in the spring of '08. And the Florida Marlins are playing in his memory." You're like, "Oh, right. My God." Right?
Or worse,
then the parents go out and throw the first pitch, and you see the mom, and you're like, "Oh, my God, this is the worst story ever." You know, and then the mom's just like, "I just, you know, try to survive every day in his memory, and this is the greatest thing they could have ever done." And you're like, "Oh." I'm just sitting there with my daughter in a headlock, like, "Don't ever get sick." Yeah. Anyway.
Is that a good closer?
Yeah, better be.
All right, bye, Felicia.
I don't know. I think I'm going to start crying.
All right. Thanks, man. Good
third time today.
All right. Is it true? All right.